Great morning, great morning, great morning, precious people. You know what time it is. That's right. It's time for your favorite talk show, The Culture Call, with yours truly, L. Spencer Smith, right here on Praise 93.3790 WTSK. It is the place, what, where Tuscaloosa meets the world. And of course, for the next 2 hours from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., we're going to be talking a little bit about everything. Y'all know how we do it, from society to sports, education to economics, from religion to relationships. And that's always, always, y'all, this is my promise, that we are going to create a safe space to have empowering, provocative, and yes, yes, sometimes you got to lean into controversial conversations. But guess what? You can call in and chat it up with me as we learn together right here on The Culture Call. It's shout out time. Shout out number one. Welcome to all of our new listeners to the CC family. Listen, this is a plane. We're taking all buckle up. We're so glad to have you on board with us this morning. I'm telling you, The Culture Call is a phenomenal feature to our area, and we are glad that we can have you with your listening ears and your conversing mouth to be a part of what we are doing and what we've created here. So I don't know whether you're at your desk with your AirPods on, you're riding through the city, or maybe you're on vacation. Welcome, welcome, first timer, to The Culture Call. Shout out number two to all of our faithful, committed, I'm telling, dedicated listeners. You tune in every day. You have literally, I'm talking about literally, made us what we are, which is the number one talk show here in West Alabama. And I am super grateful for that. Hey, we could not have done it without you. Every time you see me, you're embracing me. You're telling me what was on my show. Hey, you're listening. You're telling me what I talked about. Hey, you're saying, telling me what I need not to say or what you want me to dig into. And I appreciate it. I could not do this without you. Thank you so very, very much. And then last but not least, shout out number three, Brother Jay, the man with the plan that leads us from 5 a.m. all the way up to the 10 o'clock hour, passing me this hot baton and telling me, son, run on to see what the end is going to be. That's right. His wisdom, insight, and I'm talking about his genius, has caused us to make sure that we are on top of it all. And I'm super proud and glad to be connected to him. He plays the best in gospel and inspirational music every morning with his ear to the streets and ear to the past and ear to the future. Hey, it just gets better with Brother Jay. So thank you, Brother Jay. Hey, guess what, y'all? I need you to keep this with you always. So do me a favor, go to your app store on your smart device, Apple or Android, and download from the app store this free 99 app called Praise 93.3 FM. You're going to find it there. Download that on your phone, and guess what you can do? You can listen to us from all around the country. That app has so many amazing features that will help you listen to The Culture Call, Brother Jay at 5 if you're up that early, in the afternoon with Minister Chris, late at night with Sister Darlene, all of the Sunday broadcasts and the program Saturday broadcast with churches all around, the weather, current events. I'm telling you, that app has everything. Special blogs, everything. You just can't miss it. But it's got to be on your phone. So go ahead and download that. So no matter if you are in Phoenix, Arizona, Dallas, Texas, Miami, Florida, or you might be right here in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, the beautiful city of Tuscaloosa, Birmingham, Montgomery, Mobile, Huntsville. Y'all get in on it too. Yeah, Aliceville, Gordo, Utah, Boulder G, Reform. Y'all get in on it too. Hey, we do it, I'm telling you, better when we all come together. I need you to write down this number. Listen, 205-752-4800. That's 205-752-4800. And call in and be a part of the show. But maybe you can't call in where you are. I get it. That app has a chat feature, and it will send me what you want to say directly to me while I'm on the air, and I can read it. Absolutely. I can read it, and we can discuss it when you send it to me. So please, please make certain that you are a part, an interactive part of this conversation right here on The Culture Call. I need everybody to send me their public service announcements and events at culturecall.praise@gmail.com. That's culturecall.praise@gmail.com. lottiedottie.praise@gmail.com and give me an opportunity to let Lottie, Dottie, and everybody know the wonderful and awesome things that you're doing at your church, your events, your sorority, your fraternity, whether you're a singer trying to have a concert, a preacher running a revival, hey, or in this season, any candidate running for office, send that public service announcement to me. Yeah, again, at culturecall.praise@gmail.com. Also, you can send it on this feature, our social media page, Facebook. Go to The Culture Call, press like, and then you can send us a message and that we will say it on the air. Why? Because we want to put some faces in the place to let you know what you're doing is so very important. You know why? Because we do it better always when we do it together. Listen, here's what I need you to do. I need you to sit back and relax, grab you some coffee, Maxwell House Starbucks. You know how we do it. If you don't like coffee, get you some herbal tea. Chamomile if you're trying to calm down. Y'all know how we do it. Green tea if you need a little caffeine spike toward lunch. And our new tea, hibiscus. That's right. It's a red tea, but it helps with your diabetes and your blood pressure. Go ahead and get you some. And don't use regular sugar. Go ahead and use that stevia, or you can use agave syrup. That's good. That's a low glycemic. You can do that as well. Or guess what? Don't like tea or coffee? Coffee or tea? Get you some water. Spring or alkaline. That's right. Flush out that systems. Wake up those cells. Hey, detox that body. And come on, let's get into the culture. Listen, as I said before, and I've been reiterating this because I don't want you to miss the thematics of why we perhaps keep talking about the same things. We have some amazing guests. Some local candidates are going to come through on Thursday. We got them scheduled, just waiting to finalize a few more of them. You know, this is election season, and January is almost over, and the election is in March. Our local election right here is in March for our city council and our Board of Education, all of that. And I've invited all of them to come on to talk to the constituents, right? Just to, you know, make you aware of what they're running, that they're running, number one, what their platform is, what their vision is, and what challenges they believe that they may face in terms of bringing us forward to a one Tuscaloosa that's going toward the future. So we're lining that up, you know, already today. I'm just super excited because I love this time of year. I love this kind of thing. In terms of talking about government and politics and people. And that's how we begin to build community, right? Because community is an aspect, a social aspect that involves politics, policy, polity, how we relate to each other, how we relate to people. It involves who we elect and who we appoint as leaders to speak for us. When we cannot speak for ourselves, that when they go into private corporate business chambers, governmental chambers, they speak on behalf of our community. So it's very important. It is very important, and it is work, but I enjoy it. I enjoy it, you know, and I want to start off this day just kind of, you know, like I normally do, telling you about some national news, but I want to focus on today a really kind of bringing some equilibrium, some balance back into the conversation in the cultural context of what's going on in our country, and just kind of speak to the people, not just from a theological context, a biblical context, but I really want to be cerebral. I want to get into your mind. I want to talk to you from a place that you have to understand exactly what is going on and your place in it, right? I always tell you when we're talking about building community or we're talking about any subject, really, that your input in how things develop is so very, very important. And the reason why I say that is that sometimes we as people, especially as Black people, we have a tendency to be voyeuristic, which means that we'll stand on the outside and we'll look on the inside and we allow what we see and the lenses and how we interpret specific things to dictate to us, you know, what our next move should be. You know, this past week, and I'll jump off here. This past week, my girl, Tabitha Brown, you know, she is just a beautiful soul, and she has her products in Target and, you know, in Walmart and all those other kinds of places. But I think, I don't think she's exclusively to Target, but primarily in Target to do that. And of course, because of certain executive orders that the current president just set out, that a lot of corporations, specifically Walmart, McDonald's, a lot of who we as a community patronize, have rolled back DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion clauses and training and programs with regards to their corporate entities, and they're moving and scaling them back, right? And of course, that has caused a big uproar and a brouhaha in our community, because we are like, okay, we fought so long and so hard to gain an equitable place in terms of market value, market share, placement in certain stores. You know, I grew up where they had a black hair section, but now our products, black products are being featured on major platforms there, right next to Revlon and Maybelline and some of the more European names and all that. Our products are being shown on those same platforms. And to roll back diversity, equity, and inclusion, first of all, is a choice. It's a choice. To me, it's a capitulation. It's not just capitalism, especially when you were making money because of the placement of black African-American products in your store. It makes absolutely no sense to me for us to even be dealing with, the whole idea of you know, moving out diversity, equity, and inclusion, because diversity directly affects capitalism. That the prediction is in 2040, and we're not too far from that, that this will be a majority-minority country, right? And part of these, part of Project 2025, part of the current president's whole ideological lens is to keep it, and I mean, just talk what it is, to keep it white as long as he can for his grandchildren, children, or whatever, for the Broligarchs, the Elon Musk, the head of the Zuckerbergs and all those people, you know, keep it longer, let it reflect their image and their representation, because somehow they feel like they have been the white man, and especially has been targeted targeted for, air quotes here, reverse racism and reverse discrimination, when in fact that is not true, right? But because they control media, they control, you know, marketing situations, that they also then control the narrative. So it's imperative that whenever the truth can be spoken, that it is, right? And so rolling all of these back, all of these DEI and diversity, equity, inclusion back, I was listening to a brilliant black economist named John Hope Bryant. And he was talking about this country really does not understand how money is made in a diverse economy, right? You diversify. We've already seen this in history. And so the decision to roll back diversity, equity, inclusion, you know, programs in these stores, Target, Walmart, McDonald's, you know, all these other places, speaks directly to what they believe the power of their bottom line. When you understand the trillions of dollars in economy that float through, that comes through the black community, and coupled with the fact that we have no major chain stores that we own, then we do have to go to Target. We do have to go to Walmart. We do eat in at McDonald's. We do patronize these people. And for them to make a decision to say that, yes, patronize us, spend your money there, but we're not going to bend our backs to represent your community or to provide products that literally speak to your community, is a heck of an economic choice. I mean, sit in that for a minute, that we know that you have no market share to compete with any level of Target, any level of Walmart, definitely not Walmart, or McDonald's, or et cetera, right? And we have become so, and not just black folks, but folks in America have become so comfort and convenience that it is by fast food, and we don't cook as we used to. We don't grow our food. This is not an agrarian society. You know, we don't even care for the farmers like we used to back in the day when I was growing up. And so because of that, they have to, in their minds, now hear me, in their minds and in their lens, with their lens, they're saying, well, they're going to have to come to us anyway, right? We have the power of the purse, you know? It's just like Jamie Dimon, the president of oh my goodness, this whole Morgan Stanley, I believe he is. And he was like, you know, yeah, tariffs are going to affect, eggs are going to go up, all these products are going to go up, and they're going to pay more. And he said, suck it up and get over it. Because when you're rich, you don't really have to worry about how much things cost, right? And I mean, he's uber rich, right? And so the whole idea was people were calling for Tabitha. Let me get back to her. People were calling for Tabitha to take your products out of our Target and do X, Y, Z, A, B, C. And Tabitha came on and she was talking about, you know, hey, I need y'all just to breathe for a moment, because the art of someone who is not intelligent but is a marketeer, part of their ilk is to control the narrative. It is to create anxiety. It is to create angst. It is for you to be reflexive and, better yet, genuflect, bow down to their orders and their and the you know, and to protest. They're trying to stir up confusion because they're trying to support a particular narrative that they probably painted in public and in private, which was even worse, about who a particular people are. So they're expecting 1960s, 1950s revolts and all of that. So, you know, Tabitha was like, y'all calm down. First of all, Target has to honor whatever contract that they have with her, and not just her, but all black business, number one. Number two, Target did not say that they would remove black products. Now, that's a different situation, because to do that, Target knows that it will lose in court. That, hear me, Target knows it will lose and lose big in court if they did that. Okay, so no. Their whole idea is that the programming by which we were specializing and moving forward in this, we're going to scale back on that, right? Because Tabitha had prime placement and other black merchants had prime placement when you walk into those stores. Well, and it was because of the DEI. We're going to give them, you know, representation. But what we're doing, what we're saying is we're scaling back on the representation, not necessarily the products, right? And so many people were calling on, take your products out, take your products out, which tells me, number one, we don't necessarily know how business works, because she could be tremendously sued if she did that. The same way they could be tremendously sued if they moved her products out, vice versa, because she is what? Under contract, right? And so she was saying, hey, y'all, I don't know what the future is going to hold, but right now, let's get a strategy and a plan. Because do any of y'all have stores? Do you all have chain stores around the country where if I wanted to sell my product, that you would get it, you would purchase it, right? So, right, we can't be upset when she's in this situation and we want her to pull her product out, because it ain't your product. It ain't my product. So we big when it's that. But then her question is valid as well. Are you going to support? If she pulled all of her spices and her wines and her other thing, clothing, if she pulled it out, is there a black chain store, reputable chain store, nationwide, where she could feature her products and our community will literally support her? You and I know the answer to that question. The answer is what? No. So she has to be strategic. She has to think about what her next moves are. I know you're mad. I know you're angry. I know you're upset. And you got a right to be all of that. I know you are enraged. I know you are hurt. All of that. But here's the deal. Black folks, we cannot move without a strategy. The days of being mad without strategy for protesting without a strategy, if we don't have that, what are we asking for? What and not only what are we asking for, but here it is. Is the present representation in Congress going to be able to do that? Well, going to be willing to do that? Number one, no. Because here's the deal. I was talking to one of my friends online, and they said he cannot believe that they gave us the playbook. They told you about Project 2025, and this is a part of it. They told you everything they were going to do, and people, humans, did not believe them. Did not. Hispanics didn't. Asians didn't believe them. Some black folks didn't. Some white folks didn't. Most white folks didn't. And now, when you see them doing, watch this, what they told you they would do. Push pause, y'all. Stop right there. Put a quarter in the meter and let's park right there. Look, they told us with no unclear intent what they were going to do. And yet and still, we chose not to have the compassionate one. We chose not to have the more intelligent one, who had more political savvy. Now, please don't get it twisted that just because an individual does not mean that they have better political savvy when it comes to getting things done for the people. It just means that they're better political marketing, right? And all of that. And so, and because, watch this, because there is part of creating authoritarian governments, let me say this, is that you've got to make people not trust in structures and foundational entities, right? I got to make sure you don't trust the media. I got to make sure you don't trust government. I got to make sure you don't trust communities. I got to make sure you don't trust education. You don't trust the doctor. You don't trust anything so you can alone trust my voice. Read history. It's the historical playbook. It is always the thing that America says, well, we are different, that made us exceptional to other countries, because we can see a fool around the corner. That's what we kind of say. But when you structurally and historically, when you look at how governments and dictators come into power, they first release fear and distrust. And misinformation, right? It's that misinformation to send you down a mental rabbit hole so you don't know what to believe. And when you do all of that, then they can come in and say, I'm the one, they're doing this and they're doing that. And they can create any kind of narrative that they want to create. Can. And people will fall for it. All of the time. And what I'm calling us to do in this moment, I'm going to say this again. What I'm calling up us to do in this moment is to get a strategy. Let me try it again. Is to get a strategy. One more time. Because she asked a good question. If I moved all my product and broke my contract, y'all gonna pay my legal bill? No, we're not gonna do that. No, we're gonna come back, we're gonna be like, she sure shouldn't have done that. Cause you know how we are. Right? Do we have any stores that we own that we can feature up? No. So we have to start thinking about strategy. And this is where I think church and community leaders should come together, because one of the things that we are missing today that was in the 60s, but I also see it back on the rise, is that the church was the epicenter of what political truth, not just spiritual truth, but political truth was. Right? That the kind reverends, the doctors and all that, we believed in our institutions. Were our institutions perfect? Did it have a modicum of dissension? Yes, because that's how everything is. But when it came time for movement, when it came time for protest, when it came time, watch this, we had a strategy whereby the same people who were leading the protests could also go into the White House, also go into the governor's chambers and have conversation to tell them to delineate exactly what we wanted. Right? But when you when at the rise of social media, we have given a whole lot of power to social media. Let me say this again. We have given, and the social media doesn't tell you the truth. It is, if you ever want to find out what the truth really is, you ain't gonna find it on social media. Social media is an opinion hyper chamber. It is an opinion. It tells you what you, it's people talking about different, their own perspectives, their own this and their own that. You know, you got to really, really hunker down if you really want to find truth on social media, because it paints the life, especially for young folks, is painting the life that they want, that they desire. And what the young folk haven't lived long enough to learn is a lot of that stuff ain't even true. I want a marriage like so-and-so. And when they get home, they fight, living in different rooms, living in different houses, and end up divorced. Yeah, but they're painting a picture. They're trying to create an illusion so that you won't develop, our children won't develop a strategy, what, for their lives. And hear me, Culture Call, if you don't get anything out of today's broadcast, we've got to have a strategy for moving forward, for dealing with what is coming down, all of the executive orders, all of this and that. Listen, we have to have a strategy. And the strategy, number one, is we've got to come together and establish what is truth and what is fiction. We had a lot of issues with that with regards to Kamala Harris. We had a lot of issues with that with regards to Joe Biden. We had a lot of issues with that. I mean, even when it comes to the current president, there's a lot of issues with that because people don't know truth from fiction. Right? That's why I don't necessarily today deal with mainstream media and corporate news. Why? Because they're news commentators. They're not news reporters. In other words, news commentators, what? Comment on the news. So at best, you're getting a description of how they feel how the news is. They're not necessarily reporting it. They'll tell you that an event took place, but then they're going to give you their perspective on the event. That's not necessarily what really happened. And they don't operate in the idea of retraction, right? So we're going to have to collaborate and come together and figure out what is truth and what is fiction, or even on a local level. What's truth and what's fiction? Not what's popular, not who has the best personality, but what is the accurate information? So that when we go into that booth in March, we can make sure that we are pulling the lever for the right person, not the right party, but the right person. Because the right person, regardless of party, will cause our communities to flourish and thrive. To flourish and thrive. We got to get that. What is our strategy for moving forward? First, we got to come together and determine what is fact and what is fiction. Absolutely. Listen, this is going to be a great day here on the Culture Call. I need y'all to keep it locked. We're going to be talking about strategies for our community and how we move forward in the day of Trump, in the day of the current president, this administration, all of these executive orders and edicts that we got to face. How do we get through without a strategy? We want to dispel some of that fear and start thinking about how to go forward. Right here on the Culture Call with yours truly, L. Spencer Smith, Praise 93.3, 790 WTSK.
This is the world premiere.
And we are back right here on the Culture Call with yours truly, L. Spencer Smith, Praise 93.3, 790 WTSK. And we are having an interesting conversation, a political one, I believe. I still think that it is. Yeah, don't you? What is our strategy? Where, as Martin Luther King would say, where do we go from here? Instead of stressing out, instead of panicking and acting, you know, and not acting, but displaying our anger and our angst in this moment. And here's the deal. As if we did not know it was going to happen. I can't, I can't get away from that, because I think we also, as Americans, have to take ownership of this moment. Because as I said before, as my friend posited this morning, they told us exactly what they were going to do. And, you know, I look at, you know, certain programs and see, you know, certain communities crying. And the whole idea was like, okay, wait a minute, stop, y'all. They told you. The issue is we always think that it's going to be somebody else, right? That they're always going to come for somebody else. But if the poem is true, when there is nobody else left to come for, then they're going to come for you. And so I've seen many Hispanics and people all around the country going into churches, going into restaurants, you know, that you know, that used to live in some kind of safety and solace within communities, you know. And somebody's got to be telling, you know, somebody's got to be the one who is saying, hey, come here, X, Y, Z, A, B, C, right, to round them up. And, of course, this past week, Colombia, rejected taking any of the immigrants back. Say, no, you're going to treat them but like people with a normal process of deportation and, you know, all these different kinds of things. And in terms of our immigration laws, right? And of course, you know, because people can't take ownership, they started, well, Biden did this and Obama did that. And that gets on my nerves. No, we're talking about what we're talking about right now. We're talking about who we're talking about. You wanted to erase Obama, you wanted to erase Biden, so we're dealing with who we're dealing with right now, right? Because just because somebody else did it doesn't mean it was right. And now, please understand, I definitely understand immigration law and legal. You know, I understand there are policies and procedures to become a naturalized citizen in any country, not just this country. My issue is the demonization of people. That's my issue, culture call. It's that they can be wrong, but how you treat them. Okay, let me show you what I mean. That a black young man and a white young man, both of them the same age, same level of education, live in the same neighborhood. The black man gets stopped on the road, right? Asks for his license. He gives his license. He doesn't look like someone who the police officer thinks is just a citizen. Gets out, young man gets shot. Then of course they'll always say, "Well, I feared for my life." Okay, same white guy, you know, goes into a church, blows it up, right, or shoots everybody in there, comes out. And the officer take him to get a burger at Burger King because he's hungry. Because he, the murderer, is hungry. Same age, same demographic, same neighborhood, right? Same education, same economics. One lives, one dies. That's my problem. That you paint the black boy and then you're going to go through all of his records to find out why he deserved to get pulled over, asked for his license, gave his license, and why he deserved to be looked at as a suspect. And if you got to go all the way back to kindergarten, that's why they keep records, parents. That's why you got to tell your little boo-boo and your little TT, chill out, because they keep records for such a time as that, so that they can pull it all out and run through the media a list of things that he did that caused him to deserve not to be treated as human and the reason why he is currently dead. And then they will find the Boy Scout picture with all of his accolades as a Boy Scout, his academic awards at school, if there be any. Right? They won't talk about any of his search engines on Google or any of that. They will paint him to be a character to show how human he is. And even though he murdered all these people, how we should embrace him as a young boy who is in trouble and had a troubled psychology. Do y'all see the difference? That's my issue with the immigration situation. right? Because if we're going to deal with the truth about immigration, well, illegal aliens is how they call them in this country. And that's wrong because there is nobody illegal and nobody alien. Nobody illegal and nobody alien. There's no, no. But see, but the first illegal aliens, watch this country, when it's them, they call them pilgrims. They call them forefathers. Well, see, because they act as if this land didn't have anybody here before they got here. Got quiet. They act like this land didn't have nobody else here but them. No, but there were people that were already here. The indigenous people on this country were already here. When you came here and created a narrative, brought disease and all that, you didn't call yourself illegals. You called yourself pilgrims. You added a kind of religious context to it. You called yourself forefathers. You built a whole country and a whole government after you tried to annihilate all of the Native Americans and sent them out west to live on patches of land, reservations, all of that. You created a narrative that they were savages. You see what I'm saying? On the land that they were already on. See, narratives, you see what I mean? Narratives are everything. And so when we begin to function and deal with that, then the reality shifts. So therefore, so that the reality doesn't change, we're going to take all of that history out of school. We want to take whitewash all of that out. Black history, we want to wash all of that out. And we want to start right here, you know. We want to create that crazy, the crazy ideology and the mindset. And it's propaganda. It's a marketing scheme that everybody else except us is otherized. And they can only be fully human and fully American and fully naturalized if they follow the way that we say. We are not going to even consider them to be a human. Right? But there are people already on your staff, on your cabinet, on your inner circle, in your house that reflects that same notion, but you don't look. They're not rounding up Irish. They're not rounding up Polish. All of those immigrants that are in communities up north illegally, you're not doing that. So why are you pointing out the browner tones? This is what I'm saying. I'm not saying that people should disregard naturalization laws and immigration laws in this country. No, I'm talking about the propaganda and the marketing scheme around it. Right? Now, Bishop, what does that have to do with local politics? I'm glad that you asked. Because they are coming now, y'all, into local communities. They're allowing federal military people that was never supposed to be utilized for that. They're letting ICE, you know, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, they're letting them come into neighborhoods and in your church and in restaurants while you're eating and could ask you, give me your life. See, you see the kind of dystopian disconnect they're trying to create in the country? That's the problem that I have. And they can't do it without some kind of fealty or some kind of connection or some kind of opening, except it be from local officials. Because a local official could shut a city down. Local officials, mayor and council people, governors could shut it down. But the truth of the matter is, there are people who have that same kind of aspect, and there are people that are silent that will let them do that as long as it doesn't affect me. And I'm trying to broaden the context right here, Culture Call, that any day it could be us. It could be other people. It could be whoever they deem to be. Now, that's not antagonistic language. That's not, it might be problematic, but it's not to say that all people are wrong and all this one is right. No. It's to create an understanding of the conversation, the societal and cultural conversation that have real lives connected to it. That when you can say, I don't care if they were born here, technically, the law says that if they're born here, they're American. But now you're saying, no, that ain't it. We're going to send all the babies back. And all it takes is people who support you. Not people who know policy. Not people who know the Constitution. No, people who hate the same people you hate, or who are threatened by the same people who threaten you, or people who you feel are gaming and take advantage of the system. You're doing that and making everybody think it's the immigrant. Everybody thinks that it's the those who are Hispanic and all that. The same way they play black people after slavery. You're trying to make it seem like it's that community. But if you look at the statistics on every level, you're not going to tell me you're the majority of people in the country, but the minority of everything that goes wrong with this country? No. You're the minority in murder. You're the minority in poverty. You're the minority in low education. All of that. You're the minority in jail. All that. But you're the majority. I'm talking about overwhelming majority in the country. So what the narrative is most of us is this and y'all are that. Which is why most people say, I got to get into the system so they can look at me as a human. My thing about on this culture call today is to begin to talk about the strategies of how these things, how we can stand up against those things. The first thing is to, number one, be a truth teller. Number two, it is also having conversations of confrontation to ask the question, wait a minute, hold on. Wait. And that's why it's happening so fast. Because you know when people are talking to you real fast or they're giving you information real fast or they're counting money real fast, what you say, hey, slow down. Why? Because your brain is only able to process so quickly. And I mean, think about it. They passed, over 200 executive orders. You didn't use Congress one time for not one bill. Let me say that again. You didn't use Congress one time, not for one bill, because Congress is an obstacle. House and Senate is an obstacle. You know that the majority is razor thin. So to use them, first of all, it's going to take too long because you have to debate. So I'm going to use the power of the pen. I'm going to do an executive order. Even if the executive order is already against the law, and we've seen that already, that a lot of judges said, nope, that's unconstitutional. That's unconstitutional. No, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. Right? Thank God for good judges that stand outside of the polarity of political parties. Right? Can't too much trust the Supreme Court because, yeah, that. But federal judges, lifetime judges all around the country, like, nope, you can't do that. Nope. And if you get it, if what you're trying to do is debate it in Congress, you can't afford. You only have a 2-1 person, 3 people at max majority. And so it can't. So you're seeing a rain of executive orders because to go through the fullness of the process will mean that something that I want to do can be overturned. See, now when they get out of office and see, watch, so you got somebody saying, well, we're going to do such and so forth again. No. Those things can be overturned. The same way you overturned Biden's executive order, somebody can come in and overturn yours. Right? And so while Congress is, yeah, go ahead. That's my boy. Yo, hey, you better watch it because he's making no use of you. So in a minute, since he's making all the rules, we don't need you. Since he's making all the laws, we don't need you. A king don't need the Senate. A king don't need a house. You see? But they can't see that because they haven't come for them yet. And what I'm trying to get our people to understand is that while all of this is going on, slow down. Don't allow the executive orders and all that other stuff to create the speed by which you begin to process and strategize our moves forward. We have to come together. We have to come together. I'm going to say that again. We have to come together to make sure, because again, right now, it's for my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, and I'm praying that the Lord keeps life and body that I can see all of that happen. So I got to start planning. Now, it's what we do now. The foundation, the pedagogy of what we see today happen years ago in the 80s, late 70s, and the 80s. You know, and I'm not going to run all of that history for you, but that's when it started. What we see today, those people who started are long gone. They are in their graves. but they started it. And what we see today is a manifestation of what was started 30, 40, 50 years ago. Absolutely. Do the math. Absolutely. And it's amazing. It's amazing. Let me tell you how it's amazing. Because, you know, one of the big things, I love the Cosby Show. I love the, but you can look at it today and it feels like it's happening today. That show started in the early mid 80s, but it still feels relevant in 2025, which means that my children, my grandchildren, you know, are getting the benefit of what I had when I was still in high school. That's how time works. What I'm telling you is we got to strategize. That Martin Luther King's dream was never realized in our community. In this country, definitely was not. But like, we got the Jeffersons and we moved on up to the east side to a deluxe apartment in the sky, and we got happy. We started integrating and all those different kinds of things in their neighborhoods and their schools and all that. And guess what we did? We forgot the strategy. We took our eyes off the ball. But you didn't understand that there were still roots that have been being paved silently with a whole lot of money as infrastructure being built. Reality. And here we are. And you're right. We are not our ancestors, because guess what? We ain't got no strategy. Culture call, we need to get a strategy. Our foreparents were wise. They came together. They learned how to recognize in each and every industry who the voices and who the people who they could put up. They didn't just put up everybody. Everybody wasn't going to speak for them. Everybody wasn't on, you know. And again, they were living in an hour without social media. Social media allows everybody to be a voice. And they think that when they're popular, that they speak for everybody. But just because a couple of million people follow you, they could simply be nosy. That doesn't mean that that person is the voice of our community. Absolutely not. But that's what they want you to think. That's what they want the society to think. So we got to figure out, from the local all the way up to the national, who are our voices? Our voices don't just become voices because we hear them. Our voices become our voices because we designate them to speak for us. Yeah, I think that's important, Culture Call. Listen, I need y'all to keep it locked right here. There's so much more to come. Got so much to talk about right here on the Culture Call with yours truly, L. Spencer Smith. Keep it locked right here.
This is a world premiere.
And we are back. It's the top of the hour right here on the Culture Call, 11 a.m. and some change. And hey, we're having a wonderful day. Welcome to all of you who are catching us on our second hour. Hey, you might be busy, might have been in the meetings or whatever. On the first hour, never you fret, never you mind. We're just glad that you slid in and you made it. Absolutely. And we are grateful to have you with us on this morning. Listen, I want to remind you to send in your public service announcements and your events to culturecall.praise@gmail.com. That's culturecall.praise@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Facebook. Just press the like button on the Culture Call and send it to us via DM, direct message, and we will announce it on the air. We want to let everybody know the wonderful things that's happening in your neighborhood. I don't want you to miss out on it one single bit, right? And don't want anybody else to miss out on it, because you'll already be there. But we want to send people to the place and support each other. We got to support each other. I know that might be some, don't go to that person. Don't do that. Don't support them. Hey, but they want everybody to support whatever they put on. So let's make it a habit as much as we can to show up for each other, right? You just never know where God's going to hide your blessing in a day like today. You might go to a place that you heard on the Culture Call and God meet you there in through someone's words and embrace. They might put a little something in your hand. You just never know what you might need that God knows that you need. So, hey, let's support each other and send those events in so that we'll know where to go and how to meet you there. Okay, good deal. And let everybody know that you heard about it on the Culture Call. Listen, we're talking about strategies and moving forward. And I'm super, super duper excited, because you know what? One of the things that I believe that's very, very important in this hour is this whole idea of understanding. You can't understand a conversation or have a conversation if you don't understand the narrative, right? If you don't understand the backstory of a particular thing. That's why I do a whole lot of history. That's why I look at it, I study it. That's why I try to connect it. And whether I'm preaching or whether I am lecturing or whatever I'm doing, I try to bring a level of historicity to the conversation, because history a lot of times tells us or helps us better yet navigate and develop the proper lens by which we need to see a thing, right? And we need to view a particular context of an individual's or a situation's life, right? This thing is here because of that thing, right? I teach people that's why you ought to be sensitive and mindful when you meet people or when you're in relationships, right? Because everybody comes from different places and different things and different houses, different last names, different peoples, different experiences. And those experiences shape us and make us into who we are, to act, to think, to embrace, to dispel, you know, disregard. And so we can't, you know, we can't just say on the surface, oh, that person is mean, or that person is closed off, or that person is this or that way, without at least causing ourselves to understanding the history of that individual. Because you might think somebody has an attitude when really they don't. They have a very difficult time operating in different companion or relational contexts because of childhood issues or because of the way they were reared in their home. They didn't have, you know, that kind of skills, social skills were not developed in them. And so, you know, they become adults, and we start, you know, creating narratives out of thin air because they don't respond to us, watch this, like we respond, or they don't see a thing what? Like we see it, right? This is why history is so important. This is why you have to have conversations to understand the people's narrative arcs and narrative identities is what we call it in theological circles and literary circles, that this character has been developed by. You know, I love Marvel movies, y'all. And I'm going to get back to talking about community politics. But I love Marvel movies. You know, Iron Man, Thor, Hulk, you know, Black Widow. I love all of that. Because what Marvel does has a unique way of doing is they give us beginning narratives. They show us how these people become the superhero, or how they learn how to matriculate their superpower. They let us see what their struggles are, their processes of development, right? And how they, you know, I'm waiting on the narrative. And I mean, this is the culture call. I don't know who might be listening. I'm waiting on the narrative of Thanos. That's the one. That's because I want to see how he came to be. I want to see how I know. And I understand that that's in the works. But nonetheless, I want to see how he became that kind of philosophically evil individual. And again, if you're not a Marvel student, then it probably won't work, right? But I love looking at people who they take them, shows that take a person from their young age, allows us to see them, how they grow up, all X, Y, Z, A, B, C, lets us follow their narrative arc, and then their adult lives begin to unfold certain patterns that we then adjudicate. And a lot of us, we adjudicate a thing at patterns, right? One of the things that was interesting to me, and I'm going to talk just a little bit about the former president, is that when he was running, I wasn't listening to him. His cousin or his aunt or his niece, I think it might be his niece, was on social media giving the people a backdrop of what created the individual that we see. And, you know, when you stand back and you look at it, you're like, okay, now this is beginning to make sense, because this, right? when you look at people like Elon Musk, or when you look at people who have, you know, all of these people who you see who are popular, and you can frame a certain reference about them. And I'm not saying that is an incorrect reference, but I'm saying it's most accurate when you begin to follow the trail of their life. See, maybe in the last decade, maybe he just appeared and it would seemingly be out of nowhere. But those kind of people in this country, you know, were not apparent. Were not, you know, Donald Trump had been the epitome of the rich guy, even though he wasn't the richest guy. We knew Warren Buffett was more rich than him. We knew there were other rich people, but nobody epitomized that like he did, right? Whether that was fake or whether that was conjured or whether that was a narrative created by the media, it was a narrative still, right? And so this whole idea of people ever thinking, you know, they did a good job, especially in the 80s and 90s, disconnecting his troubles with the Justice Department. They did a good job with he and his father's quarrels with the Justice Department in terms of racism and housing and all that. They did a great job of disconnecting him from the Central Park Five. They did a good job of disconnecting him from the failed efforts with regards to the casinos in Atlantic City. I mean, the media did a wonderful job in creating this caricature. And so when you look at that individual, you say, how did this person get that way? There is always a following narrative, right? There is always a reason why. A reason why they do what they do or coupled with why they be who they are, you know? And I think it's very important. This is why, one of the reasons why I invite the candidates for local elections on, because that's a part of their narrative, to ask them questions, you know, to say, hey, how did you get here? What made you want to lead? What made you file, go down to the office, the clerk's office and file to run for this district? What is it about, you know? And what brings you to this place? Because I think that's very, very important. I think that's very, very, very significant to how we begin to shape the not just the opinion, but even about the truth about that individual. And we are only dealing with a modicum of truth because I think real true truth, if I can use that, real truth lies within the articulation of the individual. They have to really tell you, you know, who they are and what all these things of that nature, right? But parenthetically and from a parameter perspective, we can look at those things and begin to surmise exactly who these individuals are. And Culture Call, when I tell you, you know, somebody's right now looking at your life and treating you a certain way, but they have no clue about how you know what it took for you to get here. I think that's why I love the energy of church. That's why I love the energy, especially of the church that I grew up in, the Pentecostal church. I love it because of testimony service, because you got a snapshot of that person's journey, right? And that created an agreement and an atmosphere of praise, because, you know, we had a song called Look Where He Brought Me From, you know, brought me out of darkness into the marvelous light. Look where he brought me from. That, I mean, we sung that, you know, all that. And people would help and join in because they had a comparative narrative. And that's very important. We got to know who is vying to lead us, to speak for us, right? That, you know, right now that so many people put their faith in an individual who has never, in anything, has never showed you his childhood, family, never showed you any of that, never brought you up for the entire journey. It's like a place where I want to start, and we create, and I'm gonna let your fictitious imagination create a narrative for me. But at the end of the day, I'm gonna be the richest guy on the planet. You know what I'm saying? that a person, and here's why I'm saying it, that a person is West Virginia in the Appalachian Mountains, who is destitute and poor, doesn't have nothing as I'm speaking, doesn't have anything as I'm talking right now, would find commonality and relationality with the individual who has never been there is amazing to me. No, think about it. That person in Appalachia had to create a narrative for him, for them to connect, because we connect through various narratives, right? That you are friends with who you are friends with because you all found commonality in narrative somewhere. Even though you could have been born in polar places, East Coast, West Coast, North, South, the reason why you all so close is because somewhere in your connection, you had a conversation and you found some level of identity in their narrative. Oh, I understand that. Oh, me too. Right? But you know, that's why I'm so amazed, especially as Southerners, how we choose our leaders, because we don't always choose our leaders because they have a narrative that we share, right? We don't have a narrative, and that's black, white, Hispanic. I mean, all whatever, right? You know, let's supersede social construct, right? But we have adjoining narratives somewhere, and when you don't have, my thing is, you're voting for somebody, you're supporting somebody who has no kind of connective narrative to who you are, which means they really don't identify who you are with who you are, which also means, do they even care about who I am and how I got to be who I am? And if I put you in office, am I going to see, or are you going to be an advocate for my journey? For who I am as a person, as an individual? Or are you going to be someone that gets there and forgets about me? You know, I saw an interview. A guy was doing an interview on people who were standing outside of the Capitol for inauguration and all that. All the people that supported him. And the guy was saying, you think you're going to get in there? And they're like, we don't know. Right. And I mean, and again, a narrative is already being created. And do you think they're going to make room for the people that put him in? Well, you know, it's Coco. All of us will be out here. We are here and everything. And so the guy says, yeah, but the people who put him in office are out here. That's why presidents in the past have had all of their inaugurations outside, because there is no space to accommodate the millions of people who voted for you, let alone the thousands who would travel to Washington, D.C., to celebrate your inauguration. I mean, here it is. It's a contradictory of narratives now, because he asked them, who do you think is inside then supporting him? You? No. The broligarchs, the rich, ultra-rich of the country, was sitting in front of the cabinet, closest to him, like they were the cabinet. Right? Amazing. Just amazing, right? That's who he shares a narrative with. Yeah. That's who, that there you go. That's kind of what we, this country has failed in discovering its narratives. And what I'm trying to make sure, it starts in the local. Who has your narrative? Who shares your narrative? Who can you say, okay, yeah, we believe the same? Not just with mouth, not with just with word, but their actions and their deed back up what they're saying. Who shares that? Huh, Culture Call? Who does that? You know? So that you won't be left out in the cold when the people who they really share it with come. Now, they're standing in the warmth. You're outside freezing, but they wouldn't have been in office without you, lest you think. See, and that's, again, that's the power of narrative. That's the power of that's the power of those kinds of things. You know what I'm saying? That And it's kind of what I love about community. It's what I love about church. It's what I love about school. It's what I love all that, because my thing has always been being able to find someone who I can have something in common with. And the question is what do you have in common with them? There you go. That's really where I was trying to go. I could have said it shorter, but yeah. What do you have in common with them? What? Because if you put them there in government, if you vote for them for mayor, if you vote for them for city council, if you vote for them for the board of education, the first question you got to ask is, what do you have in common with me, my neighborhood, my community, my folks? Don't just come and tell me vote for you, and there is no connection. What's our level of connection? Well, we want to see. Well, what have you done before? Have you been to a PTA meeting? What have you done in the area? I mean, what's your work? Because politics are about the people. What's your work with the people? What have you done for the people? I'm not talking about your family and your friends. I'm not talking about the family reunion, folks. You already got their vote. I'm talking about the people in the community. What have you done? And I think that's a very, very fair question. That's a very, very fair posit. If you want me, you want my vote, if you want to represent me, then I need to see me. I need to find me in you. And the only way I can find me in you is if we have a conversation of narratives. Y'all see where I'm going with this? It ain't hard. This ain't difficult. We have to have a conversation of narratives. You want my vote? Then show me you know how I feel. Not just my fears, but my journey. Not just my desire, but my journey. How? Right? That's important. That is important. And we keep putting people in office who do not have any kind of connection with any level of our journey. The ultra rich does not know what it means to be poor. They don't know what it means to eat government cheese. They don't know what it means to get SNAP benefits. They don't know what it means to live on welfare. They don't know what it means to live in public housing. They do not know what it means to walk in a store and have the people follow you because they don't trust you because of your color, your skin. They don't know that. How it means, they don't know what it means to have to figure out how you're going to pay your car note. And you can only pay part of it because you got to pay your rent that's already past due. They don't know any of that. But here's the deal. We keep thinking when you put somebody like that in power, they, because of what they have, going to make our lives better. And I'm telling you, history shows us they do not. They're going to take care of the people who they have commonality with. Well, teach the class. I will. That's what it is. They're going to show you in just a moment, right? They're going to show you that, okay, yeah, they're going to get all the tax cuts. You put them in power, but you're not getting none. Your taxes are going to be raised. And you're going to be sitting there looking like, what? There are people today that are hiding because you went to the booth and they didn't bother you while you were going to the booth. They didn't bother you while you were doing, they didn't bother you none of that, while you were painting their house and paving their roads, building their roofs. They didn't bother you picking their fruit. Didn't bother you one bit. You know why? Because they didn't have the power and they didn't want it under another administration. Now that their administration is there and they're sending in raids to get your children, to get you off your job, you're hiding. And the question is, what made you think that they understood the opportunities that made you, quote unquote, come from a country that was dealing with XYZ to come to this place of opportunity? What made you think that when they've always had the opportunity? When they've always had the opportunity, what made you think that they're going to do the same thing? That's my point. That is my, again, we all rise to certain levels of achievement and success. But success should never make you forget your journey. Never. Never. I will never forget, 106 Fennec Drive, where we lived in a two-bedroom house, one bathroom, mom and my daddy, three boys in the same bed. We lived, had bunk beds in one room. I'll never forget that, where the floor was slanted because our house stood on cinder blocks. I never forgot that and will never forget that. And where I live now is a far cry from that. But that is the place I meet people. If you don't understand how to treat people who live like that, then you and I can't have a relationship. Mark that down with a red pen. You and I can't. If you treat poor people bad, if you act like they are not existent, no, absolutely not. Then you and I can't, we can't kick it at all. We can't get to a place of achievement. This is our community. We can't get to a place of achievement and then get too good and get better than people. My conditions are better, but me being a person is not better, because some of the people that has the highest integrity, the highest level of character, still live in those places, still live down my street. Mr. and Ms. Prello, they still live on that street. Families that I grew up with, they still live on that street. Absolutely. Better yet, that road. Absolutely. People of high values and integrity and morals. I love it. And no, I'm not living there anymore, but and I'm in a better condition than the house I grew up in. But the people are still, listen, they are still top tier. They shaped who I am. And we got to start beginning to understand that there's more at stake than what we say. There's more at stake, y'all, than us getting to a place and driving your Tesla and driving your fast car and driving your Mercedes, your G-Class, and then you get there and you forget the people who paved the way or who are still connected to those places, whose sweet potato pie and fried chicken you would die for today. We cannot forget those places. And that's how we got to start picking the people who we elect in government. Bet on that one. Listen, this is Elspeth Smith right here on the Culture Call, having a wonderful conversation, but I need to pick a pause. I need y'all to keep it right here on Praise 93.3 790 WTSK.
This is a world premiere.
And we are back right here on the Culture Call with yours truly, Elspeth Smith, and I'm telling you, I'm hearing from you. Yeah, this is the conversation we're having. I think we need to back up a little bit. We've been talking about narratives in that last part. But I want people to represent our communities who understand us, that they are not running for a chair, that every district chair, I've been in the chambers of the city council. I saw all the leather, high back leather chairs. I see it. I understand it. That is a position of local power. That is a position that speaks of decision making and et cetera, all of that. But listen to me, and I need you to hear me. Why would you put anybody in any one of those chairs in any district and the mayor who's not going to represent all of the people? If I put somebody in District 1's chair or District 5's chair or District 4's chair, whatever district it is, whatever number, that is the people's chair. Let me say that again. That's the people's chair. And our job is to do the best that we can do to uncover, unsheathe, and investigate and make sure that whoever we send there has the highest level of character and integrity, that won't forget the community. Because guess what? In this election, communities will send people to these chairs. Right? And we don't need popularity and just because people are whatever the narratives or whatever the ideas. We need people who are going to work for our communities. That's what we need. What's your relationship with your their district? What have they done in that district? What is you have you done in this city? You know? How have you shown up for this? And what's your vision for that? Because what I don't want you to do is that when you go, here's the deal. You know, again, I study public theology, but I also have to study public policy in order to couple together public policy and public theology together. What I don't want you to do is get in that chair without a vision, without a goal, or better yet, even without a community agenda. Because when you sit in one of those chairs, the agenda will be set for you, given to you, or will be directed by you. And so guess what then? Then I've got to make sure and make certain that whoever I sit there, whoever I vote to sit there, has the community's best interest in mind. I don't need you to go and make no backroom deals because you didn't arrive. I don't need you to sit there and be looking to the left and the right and, hey, I have arrived. I don't know. I don't need you to do that so you can be first in a parade. I don't need you to do that so that you can be first at the banquet and recognized as the honorable. You know, we don't need that. That's not why you put people there. You put people there who understand the context of the community, who know how to say, but in District 7, y'all gonna have to give us something over here. You want me to vote for that? Then here's what my folks need over here. You see? That you, not them just, you know, being able to not, because compromise is a part of it. Yeah? Of the whole political spectrum. Compromise is. But here the reality is not, there's some things that must become non-negotiables when we send you there. Here's what we need you to do. Here's what we need to be. And so that when we talk to you, you can come back to us and say, hey, y'all sent me there. Here's what I accomplished. Here's what I have in my vision. And I need you to send me back so I can finish. Doesn't that make sense? And we see the improvements in the community. We see what you're doing. We see not just your face, but we see your actions. Matter of fact, I'd rather see your actions more than your face. Because your actions will tell me more about you than your face does. Because guess what you can be? You could be two-faced. You could be one face in front of me, and then you get in front of other folks, and now you're something else because you're sitting around folks that got money and got power and influence and all that, and you don't know how to articulate an agenda to say, okay, all right, but yeah. I need some of that money so I can fix these parks in my community. I can put some lights in my community. I can get some better infrastructure in my community. You feel what I'm saying? And that is the reality. That is the reality. And that's just on the local level. The same way on the state level. Where you been, man? What you been doing? See, that's the kind of person I am. Hey, Reverend, I need your vote. Bro, where you been? Sis, where you been at? I've been doing the work. Hey, I've been here on the same corner for 29 years. You ain't never stopped by to see me. You ain't never been by my church. You ain't never campaigned. You ain't never done none of that. Yeah, that part. So what? But now you need me to use my pulpit and my voice of influence to rally other folks? Huh? That part? That's what I need to know. See, this is how we begin to create the kind of community and political power and strategy that we need to influence government. Yeah. What? No. You've not earned that from me. And there are many people that voted in this last election. I know the federal election that they didn't earn anything. My life was better. Stop lying. I was talking to some young brothers. Man, he gave us a check. No, he didn't. I broke down the history and like, oh, I ain't know that. I know you didn't know that. So hush. Stop getting up on social media like you so and you waving around money. You can tell you ain't never had nothing, bro. What you doing? And then when they start looking at y'all because y'all done got all these checks and the PPP loans. Now you hiding because you can't start no financial company living in the Section 8. You took that money. You knew you didn't have no space for the business know-how. You can't have no food truck, and you ain't even got a driver's license. What are you doing? But you got an LLC, but ain't got no product, and ain't got no business plan or nothing. Yeah, them folks coming after you. Absolutely. Right? And it was Congress that did that. That was the thing. Congress did it. He wanted to make you think he did it, which is why he told the Secretary of Treasury, let me sign the check, so that you could think with your civics understanding self, that he signed it. This is, again, why currently he's not even using Congress or the Senate. No. Even though he has majorities, Republican have all three chambers. He's still not using them. You know, because he wants you to see he did it. He going to tear it up, and then he going to put it back all together. And then the next election, he's going to run, you know, like this guy talking about, well, he ought to run on a third term. But now let me show you why people of integrity matter. Okay, because I really wish I could meet this. What is his name? Andy Ogles. I really wish I could meet him. Because what you did was say, well, we want him to run from another election to be president three times, right? But in the law, you suggested that, okay, if that's the case, you would think Obama could run. Well, no, not a president that won two consecutive elections. Wait a minute, hold on. So this current president could run again because he didn't win two consecutive elections. But but Obama can't run because he won two. But ain't they the same? Wouldn't they both be running for a third term? But you knew what you were doing because you don't want him. Listen, and there are people like, yeah, that makes sense. What? Are you serious? Oh, Coach Carl, let me land this plane. I got so much to talk about, but listen, I got shows all this week. It is laughable, but do you see what I'm saying? We gotta begin to develop a strategy. And that strategy of elections, that strategy of government, is who really identifies with who we are. Who relates to us? Who's gonna speak for us? Seriously, who's gonna do it? Are you just running to be in the room? You know? And if we cannot find any level of parity there of getting them to say, okay, all right, you understand who I am. You bear witness with me on this or X, Y, and Z. If we can't do that, you see what I'm saying? If we can't do that, then we need to shut it all down. We cannot be mad. Let me try it again. We can't be mad when the government turns into a circus if we keep electing clowns. We have got to stop. Listen. I was telling a friend of mine that we have to own our own culpability in a lot of things. People decision. Don't blame it on God. And literally, I've been in church, served the Lord for the bulk of my life that I know. So I am definitely not a novice, a neophyte. No. At this age and stage, I will be considered a sage or gray-haired wise guy, well, all that kind of stuff. Here's what I've come to learn is that a lot of things we blame on the divine are really human decisions that we want God to bail us out of when we mess up. And so we ask things like, we create this whole ideology and lens called the permissive will of God. How come, God, you permitted me to do that? Because I need a fall guy. I need somebody that I can blame for my choice when I don't want to take the blame. Herein lies the rub, says William Shakespeare, Hamlet. There is the rub. Here it is, right here. We don't want to take culpability. We don't want to say that we aided and abetted this season. See, that's why a lot of black women sitting out like, yo, hey, okay. No, we told y'all. We said to y'all. Y'all say, okay, bump y'all. Okay. Then we don't necessarily, because black women are the ones that are going to be out in the street protesting. They're going to be in the politics. They're going to be, they're fighting even now. And some of them don't want to fight. They're tired of fighting, but they're still in the fight. Do you know why? Because it's in their nature to do so. But we keep ignoring that to award and reward people who have no level of narrative connection to who we are, period. And we hide behind the ignorance of the hour, and we can no longer do that. We have to develop a strategy of how to move forward, and it begins with putting our elected officials on trial and asking them, what is our commonality? What is your narrative? Let me know who you are. Let me know what you stand for. Let me see what you've done. Let me see what you're doing. And until we do that, work on your resume until it's time for the next election. Listen, this is Elspeth Smith from The Culture Call. I'll holler at y'all on the next side of the break.
This is a world premiere.
And it's time for us to go. You crying? Now, dry your eyes. Dry your eyes. We got another show coming up tomorrow. Hey, meet us right here at 10 a.m. on The Culture Call. I promise you, it's going to bless your life real good. Listen, I am so grateful and thankful to have such a faithful audience as my CC family. And again, as I said at the top, I'll say it at the bottom. I would not be the number one talk show in West Alabama without you. So thank you so very much. Listen, tell Lottie Dottie, everybody, Sadi Potty, everybody, tell them to tune in tomorrow at 10 a.m. to The Culture Call. I promise you, it's going to be a wonderful and blessed time. Until then, love intentionally. Be at peace. Be kind to everyone you meet. You never know what they are going through. I need you to embrace somebody today. Let them know that God loves them, and so you do too, right? Hey, we got to go. Well, I'll catch you tomorrow. Y'all be at peace. Love you much. Have a great and amazing day.